Carol Clegg. I'm 61 years old. It's May 14th, 2010. We're in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm talking to my sister, Chris.
My name is Kristen Clegg Williams. I'm 63. Today is May 14th, 2010. I'm at the Shrine of the Black Madonna Bookstore in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm talking to my sister, Pearl.
I think since my earliest memory of our family is standing in the backyard in the snow in Springfield with you, it's interesting to me for me to be talking to you about family history. When did you first start trying to do our family genealogy?
I started asking questions and taking notes after we moved to Atlanta the first time in 1976. Ife, my second daughter, had just been born, and Nanny and Poppy had just died. And I just wanted to find out, you know, the stories and connections. And
so how did you start? When did you start with the stories that we all had kind of thought were true stories that people had been telling us, or did you just go to census reports and stuff right off?
No, I started by asking my who was who, you know, who Grandmother Turner's parents were and who Poppy's parents were, and then I got her to, I sent her a form to fill out about herself, and I sent her forms to get Grandmother Clegg to fill out, and I just started with the information.
Did they both do it? Did they fill out the forms?
Yes, they did, and I still have the.
So what kind of
they
questions?
Filled out. And Mommy filled out a, she wrote out all the information she remembered. She wrote Grandmother Turner's information, and she wrote Grandmother Turner's parents, Eliza and Doc's names, and Eliza's mother's name, Ann Williams, and where they were born, you know, and as far as she knew. And then she wrote the plantation that they came off of with Colonel Harrison of Virginia. And then Grandmother sent me a little piece of paper where she wrote her name. She wrote all her children's names and what their occupations were. And she wrote Grandfather's name and his parents' names, where they were from. And then she wrote her parents' names, and then she wrote their names. I've never been able to find the some of the names that she put on there. You know, I don't know if they really, you know, if she got it a little off. They're not the same names that are on, like, marriage licenses and death certificates and things.
So were these like her parents' and grandparents' names that she had on there that don't show up in any of the other
things? Well, her parents' names, I found her parents, but she has her mother's parents' names. She has her mother's name, her father's name. It's not really her father's name, though, but, and her mother's mother's name. And then for her mother's mother, she was a Cherokee Indian. And, you know, that's always been something we heard about, right? Which, I guess this is jumping ahead, but, you know, Gladys had one of those tests done, the DNA test, and it went back to West Africa. There was no, going straight back through the mother's line, her mother's mother, and straight back, it went to West Africa.
So there was no Cherokee Indian in there at all?
There wasn't, but it could have been that her father was Cherokee, because that wouldn't have. However, I don't know, because I can't find any of them before the 1870 census. So that, to me, I think they must have been slaves. Otherwise, they would show up in a census.
So then after you got the initial thing back from Grandmother and then one back from Ma, then how do you take from there? They tell you what they already know. So she went, Ma knew back to her great-grandparents or further than that? On her sheet, did she tell you, like, way, way back?
Well, she knew back to Grandma. She knew Nanny, of course, her mother. She knew Jenny, Nanny's mother, and she knew Eliza, which was Jenny's mother. And she knew Eliza's mother was Ann. So she could go back there. Of course, Poppy always kept his family a secret, so can't do much with that one. But I didn't start going to census records and like that until 2004, when I got online and joined Ancestry.com, because we always lived out in the country after we left Atlanta, and there were no archives to go to And, you know, the library didn't have copies of census records. So mainly I was collecting stories and, you know, from Henry, and then would talk about their stories and when they went back to Athens, Tennessee to visit and what they remembered about their grandparents, you know. And when I finally got online in 2004, I was able to look for the censuses and find, like, I found Nanny's father, who I knew was his name because he died when she was four. And because her mother believed that the father had had him killed because he was going to sell the land, they cut off communications with that branch of the family. So I didn't know anything about the Turners except for Howard Turner. But I was able to find him with his family, so then I could find his parents and his sisters and brothers. And that was really interesting because even though I didn't know any of them, they stayed about in the same place in Lowndes County, Alabama for you know, decade after decade. So I found them in 1870, and then I could find the children as they grew up and they lived right down the road, you know, so I could find them and their children. And I could find, and Alabama had pretty good records online for like marriage records, so you could find out who married who, because sometimes it's hard to keep track of the women, since once you take a married name, that it's not, your maiden name's not listed.
So what is it? It gives you their, definitely their name and age, but does it give you anything else about them, like their jobs and things like that? Were you able to find out anything about what kinds of work these people were doing at the moment that they were filling out the census for 1870?
Right. In 1870, for instance, Howard Turner was a clerk in a grocery store, which meant he could read and write, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and his father was a farmer, and most of them were farmers. That's why they stayed in rural Lowndes County all that time.
Did they own
he
that
had,
land?
He had, yep, the father, Joe Turner, had enough land that he was giving each of his sons, I think there were four sons, he divided the land up. He was giving each of the sons a couple of hundred acres or something. I don't know where he got it. I have to try to find that out. But that's why it was a big, but there were big fights between him and Howard about Howard and Jenny wanted to sell the land and move to Montgomery because they didn't like living out in the country. And so that's why she thought that the father had him killed so that he couldn't sell the land. I mean, that's pretty bad. I don't know.
I never even heard that one.
Oh, yeah.
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 So yeah. Then after her husband died, the white lawyers
got the land anyway.
That's what I was going to say.
She didn't sell it. She lost it. The father didn't get it. And I think years later, I heard one story that Nanny had run into one of her cousins and had asked her about the story about the father having the son killed, and she said that it hadn't happened, but I don't believe that.
So how much of what you found was borne out by what the people had told you, by what they said? Like when you look at grandmother's list and you know that there's some people on there whose names you haven't been able to find, did that happen a lot, that people would say things as they remembered it, but then it really wasn't anything that you could check because it was just a oral history, a family story?
Well, you remember that, I think it was in the early 80s, Ma wrote us she sent a copy to each of us talking about Nanny and then talking about Grandmother Turner. And then she wrote what she remembered about each of Grandmother Turner's sisters who were Eliza's children. And later on, I was able to find a representative from each of those children, the ones that lived and had children. I was able to find a family member who would tell me what happened with their family. And sometime what she told me was off, but it was enough that I could find the people. You mm-hmm. know, I could find their granddaughter or something. When I started using Google, I started Googling names. And I found quite a few people. And then once you meet one cousin, sometime they're in touch with another cousin. You know, so I got her story. And then I would get what their story, you know. And one of the most interesting stories was the one that we grew up hearing about Eliza being, do you remember this? It was about Eliza being
Who was a seamstress.
Yeah, she was a seamstress. And she was supposed to be Colonel Harrison's daughter. That was the slave master. And her mother was Anne. And Mommy said that his wife did not have any children. Colonel Harrison's wife didn't have any children. And she was so upset with him for having this child with a slave woman that she was so mean and horrible to him that finally he freed him. Okay, so, I mean, that's a pretty specific
story. That's the story.
Colonel Harrison
too.
Of Virginia, but they were in Montgomery, so I thought, well, maybe when he freed him, he took him to Montgomery.
That was the part of the end of that story that I heard, was that then when he freed him, he took him to Montgomery and bought a house for him,
right?
So they could still continue to work as seamstresses.
Right. Okay. So I started looking when I could get online. I started looking for her in the her and Doc Allen in the census, because they should have been free. If they were free, they would be in the 1860 census, which is the last one before the Civil War. Before that, the slaves were just enumerated by age and color. And so, and, you know, slave master, 100 people, you don't know what their names were, you know. But if you're free, then your name would be on there. So I started looking for Eliza Allen and Doc Allen. I couldn't find them. I looked in Montgomery. And then I started looking for Colonel Harrison. And I finally found him in Montgomery. He had come from Virginia, but that was like in 1800, you know, but he had his plantation and stuff was in Montgomery and Lowndes County. And I found him with his wife and three daughters. And so I said, kind of strange. If she had children, then how is that story? You know, something's not right there. And so it was right around that time. I kept looking for Eliza under, I looked for her as Harrison, but I couldn't find her. I looked in Lowndes County. I looked in Montgomery. I couldn't find her. So it was around this time that I got in touch with Margaret. People kept telling me to write. Our cousin Margaret, McCall Thomas Ward, who everybody said had done a whole lot of research and she could help me out. Leontine and MV and everybody was telling me. So finally I wrote her and said that I'd been trying to get the family history together. I sent her what I had. And a year later maybe, she finally wrote. She said she just found my letter again and she was so embarrassed she hadn't written. So she wrote me and made corrections. And she said that it had been so too long since she'd been working on that branch of the family because she'd been working on a different branch, but that I'd inspired her to get back into it. And then we didn't really keep in touch because I didn't go to Detroit that much. You know, we were in Idaho, which is 4 hours away. So when Leontine died, I was in Detroit. I went to Leontine's funeral, and Margaret was there because Leontine, they were both in the same genealogy group. They had both done research together. So after the funeral, I had a chance to talk with Margaret. And before that, I looked out the window one day, and there were these two women wandering around my road. You know, we lived on the end of a dead-end dirt road, right? We had big dogs, so it was all fenced in. People just didn't walk on the porch. But there were these two women wandering around out there. So I went out to find out what, you know, could I help them? I figured they were in the wrong place. So one of them had a big envelope full of information that Margaret had sent up with her and asked her to drop it off. It had a big obituary for Colonel Harrison's wife that mentioned her surrounded by her loving family. And it had a couple of slave censuses with a list of all his slaves by color and age.
By
and
color meaning mulatto
or black. And sex, male or female. And it had some other information in there, too. I can't remember what else, but, you know, I mean, that was pretty thrilling getting all that. So, I think it was a big copy of the 1870 census with them in it, in Montgomery, Doc Allen and everybody. So then when I saw Margaret another couple of years passed, so I saw her and we talked, and she said that she wanted me to do some, to see if I could find out something about a Milton Saffold, who was another slave owner, who she thought was her grandmother, Mary Allen's father. This was Eliza's first child and our great-grandmother Jenny's oldest sister. And she had reason to believe that Doc Allen wasn't her father, that Milton Saffold was, and could I find some connection between Milton Saffold and Colonel Harrison. So I was looking in marriage records one day, and I found that his youngest daughter, Martha, had married Milton Saffold. So, a connection, right? And so I hypothesized that since Eliza and Martha were about the same age, maybe they sent Eliza with her, you know, a gift of a slave to go start a new life. And that you know, that could have been
how she got to them.
Right. But, I mean, I didn't know. But then one day, it was when Aoife had just had the twins, and you sent me an email and said two women had come up to you at a reading
in Maryland,
Washington, mm-hmm. and had given you a chart which had Milton Saffold and their great-grandmother and Margaret's grandmother on there, and how the two families were related through Milton Saffold, that he had had two black families along with his two white families. So I said, you know, that was the connection that we were looking for. Of course, this is more oral history because none of this, it wasn't on anybody's birth certificate that Milton Saffold was, you know, their grandmother had two children by him after freedom. But there still wasn't, you know, it wasn't on the birth certificates, I don't think. But he did acknowledge them, and he had a house for them. And they had his name. So I thought I decided I would look for Eliza in Dallas County, because I was thinking maybe the story that Ma told us about
the wife not
right,
wanting
about,
to see
about
her.
Eliza being freed by, and her mother being freed by Colonel Harrison, maybe that wasn't the generation. Maybe it was Eliza and her daughter that were freed because, you know, by Milton Saffold. Because Martha, his first wife, died the year before Mary was born. And he didn't marry again for a couple years, and then that wife didn't have any children for a couple years. So I said, well, maybe that was them. And their plantation was in Dallas County, Alabama. So I started looking for, and I decided to do a first name search with just Eliza. And there I found Eliza and Mary Williams, which was her mother's last name, was Annie Williams. But I had never thought of that. But there they were in the 1860 census in Dallas County, living with Nancy Wiggins, who I've tried to figure out who she is. I can't quite do it.
Is it exciting to find the people where you've been looking for them for such a long time? And
it
then
was.
All
it
of a
was
sudden,
just yeah. great, you know. And there she was with 3-year-old Mary living there, you know, free. And
so, do you think about like what their lives were like? I mean, because you've got the specifics about them, but do you like find yourself making up stories or trying to figure out, you know, what they must have been like, or, you know, did they do certain things that you just kind of imagine, even though you have no way to prove what they, you know, what they might have been doing like that? Like, what were they feeling? There she was, you're talking about with little Mary, you know, do you
right.
think about?
And, yeah, I do, because, you know, I know how I felt when I had my kids, and there I was with Aoife, who had just had twins, you know, and I, you know, do think about that.
So do you feel like most of what we learned about family history just through the stories that people told us, that they were accurate enough to really help somebody get into the family history, or they would have to do a lot more than just listen to those stories to really get to where the truth of everything was?
Well, I think that in order to make the connections that you have to make to figure out what was going on or if the story's true or not, you not only need to do research, but for me, I found that I have to find people. I mean, I just like those ladies who came up to you, you know. And
do you remember why they knew that we were related? Because they had something when they came to me. That woman had a piece of paper she had written down.
Well, the daughter Janice said that she had been in touch, or her mother or her had been in touch with Margaret's sister Victoria, and that they had. But the reason that they knew that Milton Saffold had the other family, and that they had this, that the mother had the, you know, that our grandmothers or great grandmothers were related, was because one time the mother, Janice's mother, was visiting in Chicago, and she was visiting her sister, who happened to be staying at, had a room at a house that one of Mary's daughters owned, Otella Howard. And at the same time that she was visiting, that Janice's mother was visiting, Otella's mother, Mary, was visiting also. And her sister said, you've got to meet Miss McCall. You know, she looks just like Mama. You know, and so when she went back, she said she didn't remember meeting her, but she remembered looking up at the porch, and there was this, looked like a little old white lady sitting up there in a white dress on. It did look like their mother. So when she went back home, they lived in Birmingham, Alabama. When she went back home, she told her mother about Mary McCall, who she had met and who looked just like her. And her mother said, well, yeah, that's my half-sister.
And she had never said anything about her before.
She had never said anything about it, and she knew about her. And the next summer, when Mary was down there, she went to Chicago, and she said they had a nice little reunion. So Mary knew, too, but she never talked about it with her daughters or her grandchildren or anything. It was just slavery, and what happened then was just not something. You know, Doc Allen raised all the children as his children, and they didn't differentiate between them. But Janice's mother, Janice interviewed her, and she talked all about that meeting, you know, and all that she remembered about it. And I found that people turn up like that with stories, you know, just like after I found them in the census and everything. And after Margaret died, I was corresponding with Victoria's daughter, who I met, you know, one time we used to go over and visit when I went to Detroit. We would visit Margaret, and then she would take us to visit Victoria. And I asked her if she knew any of Aunt Willie's children. You know, Aunt Willie was married to Victor Tulane. She was one of Jenny's sisters also.
And he was the one who had the store, right, in Montgomery, Victor Tulane. Yeah, right. I have a picture of him.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so at first, because Margaret had wanted to put me in touch with her, because she said she had some great stories about Doc Allen and how he escaped from slavery and stuff. And so at first Victoria said she didn't know who I was talking about. And then she remembered, you know, that she is in touch with the lady every day, who's our cousin also. You know, so she put me in touch with her, and she told me the story about Doc Allen escaping and turning up at the farm where Eliza was. And
so how did he escape?
He was owned by a very mean master who kept dogs to track any slaves that would try to run away. But he went to went through a field of ramps, wild onions, and rubbed himself all over, so he smelled like ramps. And then he continued on. He came to the farm where Eliza was living, and he went up in the hayloft and covered himself up with hay because he was too tired to go on. And when the dogs came, they said they walked all around up there, but they couldn't smell him because of all the onions.
So they actually, the dogs were up there where he was, but they didn't smell the.
Right.
They didn't
that's the story.
That's
now.
A great story. I love that story.
Right. And so the, you know, he got away. They went on looking someplace else, but eventually he had to give himself up because he didn't have any place else to go. He was hungry, whatever. And so the white people on that farm called his master and said that he was there, but the master said anybody smart enough to outfox his dogs deserved to be free, and he gave him his freedom.
I never heard that. I love that story. Is
now,
he,
I have
is,
no way to check that, but I'm sure there's a kernel of truth in there, but I don't know which kernel it is, you know.
Is he the, Doc Allen is the one with the fierce little face?
There's right, a, Doc Allen is the one that we had, the nanny had a...
The photograph.
Right, a photograph mm-hmm. of him all the time.
Now, is he the one who would sweep the dirt in the front yard and that they weren't supposed to walk on it on Sunday?
Yes.
It was it Sunday that they weren't
yeah,
supposed
Sundays
to
they weren't
walk
supposed
on
to
it?
Do anything but read the Bible.
Right, and he could tell if they had walked on the front yard because it had the...
spanking
and, mm-hmm, spanked him with a flat saw?
That's what I remember. Yeah.
That he was spanking him with the flat side of a saw. I remember that, too. Yeah. I never heard that about his escape.
Well,
I think
we never had
great.
That story, but they had that... part of the family had the story, you know, so every part of the family has some part of the story, and unless you can get in touch with them, you don't know, you're just left with yours. So, and she also had a picture of Eliza, which I showed you the picture mm-hmm. with the ears, who looked nothing like I had been picturing her all these years.
But we
she
see those
like
ears
a...
came forward though. Right. Several of our grandchildren
right.
have
and
those
a
ears.
Picture of Rance, who was the brother. You know, and a picture of the sister Anna, who had passed in Chicago.
So, you said she looked nothing like the mental picture you had of her. Do you find, like, after you're looking for them and trying to find out about them, that you begin even with there's no photo?
Oh, yes, I have pictures of all of them.
In your mind?
You have to. How can you picture all those people without, you know, just like all those Turners? I picture all of them.
So, do you ever draw them?
No, I don't picture them that good.
Yeah.
You know, I have them in my mind, but I don't. I wouldn't say if I pass somebody on the street, I wouldn't say, wow, he looks just like.
So what was the difference in what you thought she looked like and what she looked like when you actually saw the picture?
Well, I can't exactly remember now what I thought she looked like, but it wasn't that. It wasn't what she looked like,
yeah.
You know. So.
What's the most, if you look at all of the people that you have come up with as you're going through this and talking to the cousins and talking to the people that we might not have known, is there one that stands out in your mind as like the most surprising ancestor that you found in there that you weren't really expecting, somebody who was doing this like a circus performer or something? I mean, I don't think we have any circus performers. I would love that.
Well,
but
we
I...
don't have any circus performers, but you remember those ladies who gave you that?
Yeah.
One of their relatives turned out to be a circus performer. And so they're related to Margaret. They're not related to, no, in fact, I think that was one of the children that wasn't related to Milton Saffold, so they're not really related to us.
But kind
but
of a circus
was.
Performer once removed,
right,
we got
yeah.
that, right?
Right.
So what about on the ones that aren't related to us? Are there any that
no,
stood out for
I
you?
I guess I feel more connection with Eliza because I spent so much time, looking for her, and I found, you know, so many cousins that I didn't know before. You know, like I found Aunt Beulah's granddaughter, you know, in Ann Arbor by Googling, and I found the one I was just telling you about. And but I didn't find anybody was a, you know, high wire artist or a highwayman or anything like that.
Are there any
you know,
any
just us seamstresses, farmers, good you know,
hardworking
no
people.
Kings, no queens, hardworking.
Anything that comes people. Through like the people who wanted land or people who were trying to go north, or is there anything that runs through the family like a strain of something?
Well, on the Clegg side of the family, I have found that starting churches seems to run through the family because, Grandfather Clegg and his brothers helped start a Presbyterian church in Athens, Tennessee. In Montgomery, the Congregationalists were the ones that sent the missionaries to teach the freed slaves.
Right.
And in Tennessee, it seems that the Presbyterians sent them, so they were Presbyterians. And then when they went to Indianapolis, they started, they were helped found a church in Indianapolis, a Presbyterian church. And then, of course, you know, once, oops, the family got to Detroit, our father started, you know, the church. And so I have found that strain running through. And with the Cleggs, one thing that I found on that side, which I've also done a lot on there, is this past year I met a cousin of a cousin. They seem to be my best bets, those not really relatives, but a lady who had bought David Clegg, who was the slave owner, had bought his house and found a safe in there that had papers, bills of sale and directions to the overseer and wills from the plantation times back to the 1830s. And she asked him if he would be interested. And so she let him copy all those papers. And he sent copies to me. And I found grandfather's grandfather listed in there with the Frank Clegg as one of the people. He was telling the overseer, you know, make sure they work, but don't be unfair and don't let them run around at night unsupervised. You know, and all the work.
So this was
handwritten? Yes, handwritten. And some of it I can't quite make out yet, but I've got most of it made out. And that was 1837. And so that's the farthest back I've gone with anybody. And that, you know, that's just, you know, you know that people were slaves, and finding documentation isn't that you're glad that they were slaves, but it gives you a piece of their life that's documented, you know?
Mm-hmm. Because they're listed among...
Because their name is there. So even though you know that that was a slave owner, which I didn't, but, you know, I knew it was a Clegg, but I didn't know which Clegg. And it's just, you know, something to see their name down there like that.
Do you feel like the, because a lot of these people who were in slavery, the father was a slave owner and all that, do you feel when you talk about family history, do you feel like you're talking about the slave owners as well as the slaves that they were having children with? Well, do you ever follow the thread of the owners of the masters?
Well, you have to follow them because you can't find the records if you don't. The white folks are the ones who've got the records.
But, I mean, to their families, like to say, okay, we know that this is where this one.
Okay, like that would be the only one I really know is grandmother's father, who wasn't the guy she said on there, but everybody else says it was Buford Averett. So I found the names of his parents and stuff, but I don't really feel connected.
Right.
You know, because he didn't accept the children. He didn't want to have anything to do with them. So I just feel like...
What's the point of following that?
I don't, you know, they came from England, but I don't feel English. My family came from Kentucky and Alabama.
Yeah.
You know,
well, why do you think grandmother's story about her history, the things that she says and the things that she doesn't say, was that fairly common? Do you think that people would not want to talk about the experiences of slavery?
Right. I think this was after slavery with grandmother, but I think they didn't want to talk about a relationship or a father that didn't want to have anything to do with them. They didn't want to have anything to do with him. You know, just like now, some people feel the same way if their father or mother, you know, ignores them or maltreats them. So I think that after slavery, a lot of people didn't want to talk about slavery, but even, you know, after life after that, people don't want to bring up. To me, it's not that big of a deal because it was five generations back. It wasn't my father who said, "Who are you people? Get out of here. I don't know you." You know? So,
did somebody actually say that to some people who went to them?
Right. Grandmother's mother had four children with the Buford Averett. And what this is the story they tell, you know, Henry and them would tell, that one time they were having hard times. In the census, it says she was took in laundry. So I imagine she was, because she already had three other children. She had seven children, right? And they went to ask him for help. And he said, "Who are you people? I don't, get out of here. I know nothing about you." Now, of course, maybe he didn't, and he's not really maybe it's an elaborate story, but I mean, if he was, which I assume he was, you know,
that after that there's no reason. Would,
you know, so no, they all listed as their father her first husband, Palmer Reed.
So what do you think now that you've gotten all of the stuff that you have now, is there another piece of it that you're working on now that you're trying to put together in here?
Right now, what I need to do is put the information I have in some sort of form that our children and grandchildren will be interested enough to read. Because right now I have the records and I have interviews and I, you know, I have a whole lot of information, but it's not in any form where if I drop dead tomorrow, they're not liable to go in there and chuck it all. I mean, I hope they wouldn't, but you know, I think I have to make it into a form where it can be passed down, where people will care.
Right. And then so where they can add on whatever they've got at whatever age they would feel like doing it, they can make sure that theirs is in there.
Right. Well, yeah. That's up to them what they do, but I would like for them to read, you know, to know the story.
Are they interested in it? I know my daughter is whenever I try to talk to her, even a little bit about family history, mm-hmm. it's like you can see her suffering through letting me say this, but it doesn't really strike a chord in her yet. So I'm thinking maybe that's because she's still young, that maybe when she gets to be 50 or so and, you know, feels more connected to, you know, to the fact that she's going to be an old lady one day, that she'll be more interested in it. Are your children interested in all of this?
Some of them aren't. Some of them aren't, you know. And there's Ma's hobby. But that's what I mean. I have to put it in a form where they will be interested. You know, like people write books about their families that people that aren't even related find interesting, right? So I'm sure that it would have to be shrunk down, but I'm sure that that's what I have to do next, is put it into a form that can survive down, you know, people will read.
What would you, if you had to give one piece of advice to people who were trying to do family history, family genealogy, what would you say is the most important thing that they should know?
To talk to their relatives, to talk to their grandparents and their, you know, their parents, their aunts and uncles, their in-laws, talk to everybody, interview people and get it on tape, you know, because you can look for the census things anytime. But you're not going to be able to get those stories once the people are gone or once they can't remember them. Pure day, Wenda, you're not one to hope, pure day.